Blog Talk Radio.
You need cooling, baby, I'm not cooling.
hi all once again to Cosmic Voice on May the 15th today, one day before American Operation Spring, which should be interesting. Tonight we will have Drake with giving us some updates, hopefully a little bit of intel, and also, providing he's not too busy, we should have John Darash on from National Liberty Alliance. On that note, oh, by the way, that first song, Maluka, When the Dragonborn Comes, goes out to Tanath. Drake, how are you?
I'll be fine. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I hope everybody's fine. As everybody knows, I've been playing games with y'all a little bit in some ways. I've been reporting some things. I just put a whole bunch of posts out. Dean Chambers has been busy. I mean, that boy volunteered and he got in trouble. He didn't know how heavy it would get at times. But I just put something out about financials. This guy, Thomas, actually sent this to me. And the hard asset investor is a real deal. Now, Eric Sprott, I'm aware of, and he follows things closely and has been watching. And I've been telling you about the same thing. Remember that deal about China and other people buying tons and 50 and 100 tons of gold? Now, I'm going to stipulate this real clearly. As you know, I've stated that the capability of the cabal and bad guys and thieves and whatnot to get into the collateral accounts has been pretty much cut off. Yes, a couple of people lost fingers when the door slammed. But some of these international trips are begging missions. Oh, please, we got to have some lunch money. And I think it's hilarious myself to watch people squirm, but that's just me. Seeing these things come about that I've been trying to talk to you all about puts me in mind of somebody that warned me about keep your gun clean, make sure you got plenty of ammo, keep your head down and a tight rear end. That rear end part is being nice to the mixed company. Anybody who's been in combat knows about that or has heard about it, or if you ain't, you will soon enough. That's like that word snafu. Very descriptive. Anyway, in terms of this man's talking about a gold shortage. Coming data shows. Now, he does a little bit different deal. He's similar to what I do in some of this futuristic, premature watch your goodies, you know. Boy, messing with my mic, it is clicking in and out. Well, that's wonderful. The cabal's been trying to get in the computer all day. They ain't got in there yet, but they can step on this cheap phone. And them phone lines, I mean, man. Anyway, so back to the goody-goodies. Some people know that have been following what I've been trying to teach you all. The collateral accounts are the basis for the currencies of the planet. That means that they're based on borrowings or buyings from the collateral accounts. So, as those collateral accounts were closed to the bad guys, no more currency, no more backing at least. They probably run the presses until something burns up, but at any rate, what this means is that you're going to start seeing inflationary things, and I don't mean nice ones. anybody that uses natural gas has noticed that the price has been wacky for quite some time, long before the Ukraine deal or any of that started. Why? Well, it's called price gouging. Somebody's messing with my mic. I like to step on their... Anyway, maybe they'll catch it in the zipper in the morning. the gist of this is real simple. I've been trying to tell people to be prepared. And by being prepared, I mean you got to watch what's going on. If you want to know about money, if you want to know about being able to financially survive, I give you some tips. Right from the horse's mouth. Now, here's how it is. It's called pay attention. Now, what you watch is very simple. It's not difficult at all. Any dummy can do this and be proficient at it. And here's how it goes. You watch the stock market go up and down. Bumps its butt along the sidewalk like a little bird trying to learn to fly. When the market goes down, lately, not normally, but lately, bonds go up a little bit. They get out of the stocks. They kind of hide for safety in bonds. Then you got fuel going down and gold going up. Now, I hate to tell you, but that's also oddity. Now, here's what the fun begins. Here's where the rubber meets the road and all that. And I do suggest keeping the rubber side down. Go stupid and don't get crazy. But when you get par, which is 100, the yield drops on the bonds. So you're not going to see anything much more than 102, maybe 104. Got that high the other day on the 30-year. And you got to be aware. It's rare when the 5, 10, and 30-year all go to or pass 100, which is par, meaning the evaluation is equal. What's fun about this is I've seen this three times recently. Now, one time, it was really interesting because all of a sudden the move started happening before anything took place. They knew. And I'm talking in the morning, like before noon, they started doing this stuff. They didn't move out heavy. They were careful about it. And usually that don't ever happen. But like I say, I've seen that 100 on the bonds three times recently. The one that made me wonder about it and what I was missing was when it did it just all by itself. Oh, we get to have fun today, so let's, let's play the game, see what happens. So I decided to do some checking and get into some things. Then I found out that there are several points of critical mass going on right now, and people are not aware of this. But you better be ready, I can tell you that, unless you got some dividends and hard cash and all that ready to go. You know, I will be in trouble because you need about 2 weeks' worth of supplies. Now, I hope you got that under your, mattress or something. In the closet's fine. It would be a good idea to have a shotgun at the very least. This is my advice to you for your simple preservation. Try to lay up some bottled water if you can. It won't hurt your feelings to have something to drink when nobody else has got nothing. Okay, now, as I said, I've seen this fun and games three times, and the one time it did it all on its own. I said, wait a minute. So I looked. I found this critical mass, and it's sort of like a blood mass in a wound. If you take it out, everything, all the itching quits, and the guy don't get a fever and all that stuff. I was a medic in Vietnam. I've done some things to human bodies that I didn't think was possible, and there's still quite a bit of green OD, green thread floating around out there in people that several of them were very appreciative. They liked having their arm sewed back on and stuff. So anyway, you got these little blood masses or sticky points or whatever you want to call it. And I thought, well, this is really strange that this would have that effect. Then I found out, I did a little more checking, I found out what it was tied to. I would imagine everybody by now, I would at least hope somebody had heard of, if they're not well acquainted with, information dealing with Brother Rothschild and his Church of the Latter-day Money. And there, by the way, I've told you this a couple times. They are in hiding. Not even their supposed relatives, or who weren't quite that close, can find them. They don't know where they went. I bet that cave is really, really something too. I've seen some stuff that just walk up and the water's dripping, and you walk in, and there's a door. You go in the door, and it's like you just walked into Marshmallow Mansion or something. I mean, gold gilt everywhere and chandeliers, and it's just unbelievable. It was a freaking hole in the ground. So here's how this goes. And I want everybody to be ready, so this is why I'm telling you this. This is not fear porn. This is fact. And whether anybody likes it or not is not my problem. When the assets covering the currencies begins to run thin, one of two things is going to happen. Either we're going to start having military incursions into small countries that can't protect themselves and take their assets to supplement ours, or we go bust. Just that simple. Now, I'm gonna hit you on the head with this. The term is free fall, and free fall is simple. Boom, the bottom falls out. Point average change, 50 points up and down, that ain't too bad for the Dow. And you can use this standardly with any market. Now, you take the 50 points, prorated according to the point value of the market, that'll give you a percentage. That percentage is what you're going to have fluctuation in all the markets. Must be some kind of drawstring or something attached to all these things. So I kept looking. And so I kept checking. And I found out that there's about 8, maybe 10 places where this sort of thing can take place. They're specialty financial centers, as what they are. Nobody knows they exist. I'm not going to tell you about it because we're going to pull a surprise. You know, one of them little thing where the dude pops up from the woodpile and waves at you and says, "Hey." Okay, now, in case you didn't notice, the Dow went down to like 160-something today. Well, funny money starts at 100 points on that up-and-down stuff. And so, you know, then you know there's some kind of maneuver going off. Doesn't necessarily mean it's real serious, but there's a maneuver going on. Now, anything over 100 points, plus or minus, it can go up or down that way. And then you got fun and games. And by this, I mean that they know something about the market that nobody else knows. And there's probably half a dozen, maybe, on the planet that knows what's going on. When this happens, just because these people do know something. Now, I mean, we had real good earnings reports and all this other stuff, dropped 170, 180 points. Went right back up. But that's not the gist of what I'm trying to get across. It's the fluctuations. Stability does two or three things. It negates the point swings and generally keeps the thing on an even keel. If it's a little bit uphill, it's usually a little bit uphill. Might be a little bit downhill, but not much. But it's basically, all in all, pretty even. Now, I don't know if anybody remembers way back when, but there was a thing in 2008 called a kabooby. And this is where the lemmings got chased over the cliff, and a whole bunch of dinglebats that had investments in feathers followed them right over the cliff. This was the stock market drop. Now, actually, just to be honest with you, I don't know how well you remember. I mean, that wasn't super nasty. I mean, it got everybody's attention, and we ain't ever got the thing fixed. And that leads me to the other question. Just going back in time, have you ever studied the financials around the Great Depression and looked at what was going on? Well, I'm gonna give you an impression. Just before the housing market collapsed back in 2008, there was a big bubble in prices in real estate. You could buy a property, you could buy a hold on a property. You actually bought a property. By the time you got the paperwork, it would have doubled in value, generally 6 weeks. They were going crazy in Florida and a bunch of other places doing that. And I'm talking swamp water. You couldn't see the ground. And these people were stupid, crazy. Well, if you remember what went on then, and you see the impacts today, I mean, we still got 25-30% unemployment, whether they'll admit it, I doubt, but it's there. Anybody don't know about all the foreclosures and the fact that they're at about the same rate they was before, doesn't have a clue. Well, And I, like I say, I don't like fear porn, and this ain't fear porn. This is factual. Both will be child's play this time. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, back in 2008, we muddled through. We had most people had enough cash capability to make it. In other words, you could buy groceries. You might have to let all the bills go for a week or something. You might have had to change jobs. I mean, you might even have lost one totally, but you had four cars and didn't need two of them, so you could get by. Now, when I say child's play, I mean it. During the Great Depression, that was back in the Stone Age, when the United States was not fully technologically oriented and disassociated from Mother Earth. That means just about everybody and their mother-in-law grew something to eat. Most people had farms or were closely associated or had relatives that had one. Most people were used to working daylight to dark, sometimes longer than that. And if it was hard physical labor, so be it. I mean, you'll grow new skin. Blisters is blisters. So what if your hands bleed a little bit? As long as you can eat, that's better than starving. But in 2008, we didn't lose that much in terms of market value. A lot of people think we did, but we didn't really. The estimate this time, and this is from people who know what's going on, is 50% or more. Okay? Half. We're at 8,200, let's say, just to give the chump change in there. Now, a lot of small investors got in when the market was at a certain level, and if you didn't buy in at the point where it was around 8 to 12, depending on the stock and all that stuff and the companies involved and everything, back in 08, you're not in a position to take a hit like that. It is going to wipe you out. This is about 70% of the investors now. And I'm not talking about the average guy that would have trouble buying one share. I'm talking about somebody who buys and sells, maybe 20 to 100 shares somewhere in that area on a monthly or so basis. I'm not talking about big players that sell these great huge blocks of 1 million shares or 200,000 shares, nothing. I'm talking about the average investor. Now, I didn't think this was going to be so super bad until I checked into it and asked a couple of people. I told one guy, when he told me 50%, I told him he was full of shit. It's flat out. And these are not the kind of people you talk that way to, but I lost it. You're crazy. Oh, really? I guess I pissed him off. I don't know. Don't care. He said, okay, here's some people you can contact and ask about it. I said, okay. I did a little contacting. They think it's going to be a lot more than 50%. He's being nice. And I'm going to say that I will suggest that it would be about the area. It could be more, but I kind of don't believe so. Now, the Great Depression basically took a few days for everything to come unglued. A lot of it happened in the first couple of days. But like I say, it took a few days. In 2008, it took hours. Now, I'm really thankful that there's a thing called Stock Watch, if you ain't heard about it. Wall Street mentioned it, among others. I deal with them sometimes. Just out of curiosity, I ask them what's going on. And a lot of the time they tell me, screw off. I ain't got time to talk to you, man. I'm busy trying to keep up with this. And so I thought, well, all right, I'll call back. And a couple of days later, I get the skinny on what was going on, and the guy is out of breath. he's been pumping hard. Now, you tell me how much work you got to do on a keyboard to get out of breath, you get the idea. This boy was burning something up. And I said, I get the skinny that way, certain people, certain individuals. Now, the Great Depression, a few days. 2008 took hours. There's a little key that everybody missed, and Stockwatch is the one that caught it. And I'm going to be honest with you, I'm very thankful that they did for one simple reason. I like having America. And if that had gone on any more, any further than it did, we'd been down the tubes. In less than 20 minutes in 2008, $5 trillion went out the door. I want you to get to $5 trillion. I mean, you know what our debt is. Think about $5 trillion. Poof. You know. well, that was 2008. The system was a little cranky, clunky, and outdated. They have since updated some stuff, which is going to make this worse. That estimate of 50% when it comes unglued is going to happen in a matter of minutes. I hope Stockwatch is paying attention to things. I really do. They may, and I said may, be able to save it. If not, we're going to have a new country. Now, it's going to be up to us as to what we end up with. But I'm telling you, be ready for a new country. And be ready. If you can, by any means, put you up some canned goods. At the very least, throw some noodles or macaroni or whatever, you know, some cheese, and, you know, whatever you can find that you would eat normally anyway, that isn't something that you can't stand to eat, toss it in, throw it in the closet or whatever you got to do to keep it around. and yeah, things are going on. I had a nice long talk with Neil. And, yeah, I must apologize to everybody. I was offline for about 3 days. I just got tired of it, took a break, started watching some things, started seeing whether I had a real feel for what was going on. And I thought, this is interesting. Well, my goodness, Al Jazeera is reporting such and such, and I just talked about that the other day with so-and-so. And, I mean, lead somebody down the primrose path? No. Show you what you're liable to step in? Oh, yeah. Now, I'm going to get into some international stuff. You are familiar with Donetsk. That's that little Ukrainian province that's been thumbing its nose. And you heard about I hope everybody's been following that a little bit, but... the fun and games is this, that little problem province over there that has thumbed its nose at Kiev and told the central bankers to go take a hike is getting ahead of things in some ways. Now, I hope everybody followed Neil Keenan's post about the no-fly zone, that we were definitely looking to get that done because it would screw things up for a whole bunch of the oligarchs. And the list is growing, along with a number of countries that want to join in and have fun with these turkeys. Perez had to change his flight. Had to go around, just like they did with that one flight that Russia said, no, you ain't flying over our country. You don't have the right to be in our airspace. So, you know, then we got Swedish authorities on Sunday wouldn't let an Israeli president in their airspace. I mean, this is growing. These people are saying, I didn't know we could do that. And you can imagine the crazy Irishman and me in the background going, go, go, go. So those turkeys decided to do it early. Some people didn't bother to announce it yet or make it official, but they're doing it anyway. And then we got some interesting other things. Now, number one on the list is this no-fly. That's first. I want everybody to understand that you don't understand yet the importance, but it's going to be extraordinary. When an oligarch can't go to a country where his bank account is, that kind of screws up that checkbook. So, along with that, countries, we're holding your account until such time as you prove that you're not one of the bad guys. I mean, you think about all the things that you can do as a sovereign state. Then we got the really good news that Neil gave me today. I don't know if everybody's familiar with the first time I put this out. It's been quite a while since I did that. As a matter of fact, I put out the thing about Neil's lawsuit. And he's been scuffling around trying to get things together. Now, there's a combination of things involved in all this. It takes a certain amount of cash to be going flying around the world. That's first. In case somebody hadn't priced an international flight, I suggest you price one to get an idea. Look at what it takes to go from here to China, and you'll get some clue as to what it might be on a round trip. You might get some clue as to you got to go and purchase a ticket to go to X from Y, and you're stopping off in Z. It gets definitely gets expensive. But Neil has gotten things together. He's got the right people, finally. It took some time to find people we could trust. And he's getting ready to refile his case very soon. And very soon is going to just have to be good enough. I know when. I ain't going to tell you. It'll make the news, I'm pretty sure, when it hits. Now, I don't know if anybody's familiar with what's going on, but that will break the bank. Now, there's an auxiliary part that goes along with that in another part of the world that'll do the same thing. Oh, yeah, and I forgot to mention this. I knew I was forgetting something. A lot of the sovereign people, sovereign movement, freedom people, freedomizers, whatever you want to call them, have for quite some time tried to get the government under control. And as they got more and more frustrated, they started looking to see whether or not everybody might want to just secede from the Union. You know, you remember this, the uncivil war that we had, North and South. Well, these are states that normally would be righteous and in tune, in lockstep with everybody, going along with the program and all that. And for now, they ain't doing that. They are beginning to look at things in a different manner than what people expected them to look at it as. I mean, think about a major state, or more than one. Actually, there's five that have this under consideration of seceding. And yeah, they've already been through the legalities. Everything's set. They're looking it over to see what exactly would happen. Now, think about that. They're looking at this as a real option. Why? Well, in case anybody ain't had no dealings with the federal government lately, they're out of whack badly. They have unnecessarily created debt. And I've been doing a whole bunch of research on this stuff all day today. Since about 4:30 this morning, I've been on the Internet looking up Supreme Court cases and rulings and this and that. We don't owe the debt. Why? Because it's fictitious. Ooh. You got people out there who say, oh, no, yes, you do. Really? Well, I got a gun that says it. I don't. You want to play? Let's do it. Well, I'm not talking about your average, you know, play the game stuff. This is where the feds come after you. Now, I want you to think about this. What would you do? Would you try to hold them off at the front door while the family goes out the back over to the neighbors or something? I would. I guarantee you I would. Well, I ain't got kids here. And the wife is a pretty good shot. And then to go along with it, so am I. And we got all the ammunition we need and the right kind of guns and all 9 yards. We're ready. Somebody decides they're going to breach my front door, it's going to be painful. Guaranteed. And so this is very soon. when the case is refiled, what happens is that the recognition of the dollar goes in the toilet. And by going in the toilet, I mean it will probably not be honored any longer in foreign exchanges. Now, that means that this is the, quote, death of the dollar everybody's been talking about. In short, the Federal Reserve note dies a tragic death.
Oh, my God, what do I do? All I got is greenbacks.
Well, within our country, you're probably going to still be honoring that because there's going to be a thing coming out right next to this same thing, and everything's ready to go, called the American dollar. Big difference between being left in the lurch by these politicians and other people that think we're some kind of joke they can play with, part of the entertainment. I mean, you know, I know some people that are caught up in that, and it's sad to see somebody of quality get denigrated and actually feel like they are worthless, according to what some other dink says. Well, a dink is a note on a piano that don't quite make it, okay? It can be a sour note, too, depending on the quality of the dink that you got. Now, what I've talked about so far are just a few of the things. Now, what people don't understand is that if these people get out of hand, Neil told me he's going to publish a book called The Book of Conveyance. Oh, my. Wouldn't that cause a problem? And Russia just turned off all the GPS, and I put that out as now you see me, now you don't. It's on the website, went through the blog. Anybody ain't signed up, sign up. Go to the website, AmericanNationalMilitia.com, and there's a little box on the right side. Put your email address in there, and you should be getting your emails. And what it does is it's a direct notification kind of thing. And then Russia says, no, you ain't using our superior rocket engines to launch your efforts to get to the shuttle anymore, so now what are you going to do? Think about it. Think about it very carefully. What happens when you're cut off from stuff? If you can't go up and maintain a satellite, it's going to eventually screw up. Don't matter what it is or any of that. It's just basically going to come unglued over time anyway. But they're looking at helping it along by locking the janitor in the closet. You got to mop the floors once in a while, change the battery here and there, you know, that sort of thing. Give the old boy a tune-up so the engine starts and keeps it in its synchronous orbit. Yeah. The thing about this is that there are a lot of different things going on. Now, one of those, I've talked about this in the past, is called the Black Book. It ain't the Book of Conveyance. It's called the Black Book. It contains all of the computer program codes, all of them. There's only one real one. No copies have ever been made. Anybody that was caught trying to copy it is dead. Anybody that might try to get close enough to copy this one probably wouldn't have very good health very long. The interesting deal is this. You know about the numbers on the computer screen at the bank or loan company or wherever you go. Well, that's basically what this is, but it also is the real deal. This means that the $15 trillion we managed to get 10 back of when the Fed sent it to the U.K. in 2008, loss of $5 trillion wasn't too bad, except for one thing. What they deal in is liquid assets. Now, liquid assets are simple. That'd be like what you got in your pocket, not what you got in your bank, what you actually got can put your hands on. And when the pocket change went, that meant that you got to cash something in, sell something or some such, or borrow or do a quick loan. I can just see it now. What would the guy do behind the counter if the United States government walked up and Uncle Sam says, I need a payday loan? Oh, my God. If he didn't faint right outright, just, you know, fall over dead or something, I'd be surprised. Now, there's other things that are going on that I've been watching and I've been seeing. The positioning of they're kind of medium-sized troop carriers, troop and equipment carriers. There's a whole bunch of flights of those the other day. I mean, a big old load of them. We had three or four up here, so being in the woods like this, I would imagine there's probably 15 or 20 in some places. And they weren't flying light. They were goosing them babies up as hard as they could to make sure they got over these mountains. So that means they were loaded with something. Don't know what it was. But the military keeps a pretty close eye on things, and they do know what's going on. And they are watching what we're doing. They understand the importance and the reality of it, and I will suggest they are getting into position. Now, does that tell you anything about how close we might be? Yeah, maybe one day we can tell the weight club to maybe we can toss it in the toilet and see if it floats, and whether it does or not, we'll just flush it anyway. Oh, boy. But I want people to understand that it takes time, and I mean extraordinary time. I don't know if anybody's ever been around legislation or government paperwork in general. You do something on that level, that's one thing. You do something internationally, you got to be really careful. You have to have everything just exact. And if you don't, there'll be a couple of them spot it and say, that ain't worth the paper it's written on, and won't even talk to you then. So we got to be careful of closing that first impression door and make sure that what we got is righteous. Everybody loves it. Now, you want to know a secret? The final draft is being taken care of as we speak on that no-fly zone. I want you to think about it very carefully. Only place we're going to have to land is Japan. In all of Southeast Asia, think about it. Yeah, there's disagreements, and they play them up, and they play this, and they do that, and that's a whole lot of horse hockey, really. Most of what's going on is trumped up BS. Most people understand that it is. And I'm not going to play games with you. This financial stuff I'm talking about, what's going on in terms of the legalities they can't ignore, are finalizing. Some people, like I said, I mean, think of Donetsk. A little bitty podunk thing says, oh, no, you don't, you know. Well, that ought to stop those U.N. choppers from sticking machine guns out the door and killing people. That ought to stop the black choppers that we got running up and down the streets doing the same thing. Maybe some of the agents might be found out if they have to try to make communications and people are listening. Just maybe we might start making some solutions to some of this. The violence wasn't too bad. It was beginning to tone down. And then some idiot in the Ukraine military opened fire at a voting point. exercise your freedom and the price is death. Good Lord. There's only two killed, but that's way too many. I've asked before, you know, figure it out, let it stand down. Well, they decided to go through with the referendum anyway. And basically, they didn't decide to join Russia. They said, well, how about we just go for autonomy, self-rule? Now, there are several countries that are made up of independent states that all agree, basically, and they get a very limited, and I do mean very limited, centralized government so that each and everybody can, hey, I need some fighter bombers. The crazy people are coming out of the woods. Well, you know, it's not difficult. And yet you got them central banking thugs in Kiev who think they own the right to the lives of the people involved. Now, you think freedom's bad here? Think about being shot at for it. Think about not being able to go to the grocery because if you go outside, you get shot at. That's what I'm talking about. You think it's tight here? Still got a lot of freedom here yet. Until, of course, it hits the fan. You know what you're going to do when it hits the fan? Well, I tell you, and I tell you again, be ready. Now, there's been some people out there complaining about, oh, I lost money because Drake said to buy such and such. I said, look, here's how it is. You buy precious metals for one reason and one reason only, and you keep them for one reason and one reason only. Silver and gold are the only absolutely worldwide recognized currencies. Yeah. Now, right at first, won't be worth a lot. Right at first, you might not see a big explosion in price. But I can tell you right now that I've heard, like I say, from more than one person about this shortage, and I can understand it. If you got several big countries or countries with deep pockets either buying gold or doing trade in gold only, oh, we don't trust nobody's currency. How about I heave up some gold? Show me some yellow money, yellow metal that the originals talk about. What happens when things like this go on is that you negate the market. Now, at around 1300 on price per ounce for gold is where the mines can afford to operate. They'd like to see about 1350, 1400, somewhere along in there. Then they're really profitable. And yes, you get a discount buying directly from the mine, and if you buy a large quantity, you get another good heavy discount. But what the deal is they have to afford to reward people, and that's a reward, strict reward. You're on straight commission. What you find, you get paid for. You don't find nothing, you go hungry. Now you think about that sort of deal. I don't know if you ain't been on the internet and seen some of the pictures of those mines where these people wander around barefoot from the age of about 10, 12, long in there, up, killing themselves trying to find a little speck of gold somewhere, a little nugget or something. You ain't seen it. It's like the blood diamonds. It's like the movie Red expressed where this guy went off to farm, fell off that reservation and wiped out a whole village on his own. No reason, he just did it. This goes on. This goes on commonly. You want to see slavery at its finest? Dubai. That's the biggest slave camp on the planet, one of the biggest. I don't know if it is still the biggest. You come in there as a migrant worker, and they take your passport. And then they charge you for room and board. More than what you're making. Now, how are you going to ever get out? You've heard that old song by Tennessee Ernie Ford, load 16 tons, and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. And St. Peter, don't you call me because I can't go, because I owe my soul to the company store. That used to be a matter of fact. I mean, they had wars up here in West Virginia over that, and I mean that literally. Thousands upon thousands of people battled it out. They talk about the terrible mine calamity in Turkey, and yet here in West Virginia, where we're supposed to be safe, had a mine collapse. At least two dead. What do you do when safety is ignored? You end up with things like BP intentionally killing the Gulf of Mexico, wiping out the Cajun lifestyle. It's like up here. They want to wipe out all the industry so that nobody can afford to be here. because they don't want you to be independent of them. They want you to be reliant on them. They want you to be a considered property, that sort of thing. They do not want you to be able to step outside the system and thumb your nose at it. New York State outlawed the burning of wood. Why?
Oh, we got pollution problems.
Well, why don't you shut down some of them taxis and whatnot in New York City? Why don't we get together as a world and decide that if we are going to burn coal, we do it in a plasmic system where it's clean? Yeah, come on, let's get real. Open up a new coal-fired generated plant every week, and you got five countries doing that. And we can't even mine ours and send it out. Oh, no, the EPA won't allow that. But we can run chemtrails. We can have all kind of genetically modified, whatever you want to call it, frankenfood. Yeah. I'll give you a clue. People like Subway. Well, guess what? You go in there for breakfast, and they're serving egg substitute. I said, what is that? Lady looked at me and says, I got no idea. It tasted like, you know, I thought, wow. Then after I'm eating through my sandwich, and I thought, no, wait a minute. Looked at that sandwich. I said, I wonder what else in here is funky. And then I found they were short sheeting the bread, giving you 10 and a half inches instead of the 12 you're supposed to get. I mean, all this other. So I just kind of faded away from being a customer. I couldn't stand it no more. All of this stuff, all of the things that are relative and relatively important are pretty simple. You get to have food, you get to have water, and it's not exactly summertime yet. So you're going to have some kind of shelter. You get a lot of rain going on all across the whole country right now. And you got the Southwest that is cooking. Well, they're trying to tell us that the pollution that we can generate from running too many lights and driving around, man, us, America, is causing this. Oh, good Lord. And yet they're secretly playing weather wars. They're intentionally drying out the Southwest. Yeah, that's right. It's called weather wars. The tornadoes and all these other things. Tom found a posting on this stuff, and I said, wow, that's far out. Let's post that. You got a thing called HAARP, and if you energize the atmosphere, it causes atmospheric reactions. It's kind of like scrubbing your feet on the carpet. You walk up and touch the cat, and he won't like you very much for a while. Same thing is true when you burn anything. You create some form of long-chain molecule, generally a carbon base. They'll tell you that gas is clean. Oh, okay. Now, used to be you didn't have much of a gas bill. Stuff was relatively inexpensive. Now, all of a sudden, they're breaking the bank on you. Between $4 and $5 for gas. And I'm not talking about the kind you put in your car. I'm talking about the kind that you cook with. That's unheard of. No. Then we got gasoline going up and down according to the world market. Why is that? We're not allowed to export it. We're not allowed to export natural gas either. You get all these fracking things going on, destroying everything. You got mountaintop removal and coal mines that make it look like a moonscape when it's done. We're producing all this energy stuff. Why are we tied to the international market? Ooh, well, maybe we need to tell big oil what to do with themselves. Oh, and that's another thing that is coming to fruition, too. Getting ready to come out with some energy things that everybody's going to like. Won't be right away, but it's coming. I got two or three different plans. I'm looking for parts now. Once I get one of the suckers running and I'm off the grid, I will put all of the specifications online for everybody. That's just one. That's just for, like, house power. If you're rich and you can afford one of them electric cars, oh, and by the way, they say carbon footprint is so much less because we don't burn any fuel. You talk about a line sack, the carbon footprint is almost twice what a normal gas-burning car is. Oh, and that's another thing. You got, you're making all the cars into alcoholics, 10% ethanol. Well, guess what? We got a little station down the road here, produces and sells regular old gas, no alcohol. The mileage in my Jeep is doubled. Hello. Think about that very carefully. You nose around a bit and see if somebody might want to be doing that. that straight gas gives me, I got at least a 20% increase in power, at least, along with good gas mileage. It didn't double. That wasn't exactly accurate, but it went from about 17, 18 up to about 22. That ain't too bad. A lot of these people say, you can't get that kind of mileage. Well, I don't want to bet. Now, if I can just find somebody that knows computers, I'll have them set that on lean burn, and I'll tool along on fumes. But the thing is this. I'm in a position to be able to do some of this stuff. I'm working on some things. I'm going to try to benefit everybody in the process. Now, pretty soon, and I mean very soon, we're not going to have gas tanks. I'm telling you this ahead of time. This is very, very soon. Tesla, it's still online. Tesla's nephew drove his car around for over 2.5 years. I never put a drop of fuel in it. Tesla got him an antenna and a box of parts and built a thingy and put an electric motor in there and took the engine out of the way and tooled around. He had better acceleration than the normal gas cars, too. Electric motors, when they're put together correctly, with made it up to the right thing, are awesome. I know. I got close to a degree in electrical engineering. So the interesting part about this is that, yes, things are very close, and I know you all probably tired of hearing that, but I want you to pay specific attention to being ready. I want you to understand that it's not very far away from us. Now, we did have some ifs. Those ifs have been taken care of. Everything's in place. Finalization is coming. I want everybody to be ready. And please, be as ready as you can. If you can't be ready, find somebody who would be willing to put up with you. I mean, take them some cases of beans or whatever you got to do. But be as ready as you can. And with that, I think maybe, Tom, we got some music?
Yes, we do, Drake. That was an interesting hour. And I think most of our members realize there's a lot going on now, a lot going on with the markets, a lot going on with the gold, a lot going on with Neil, a lot going on with yourself. In the next hour, a lot going on with John Darash and the Common Law Grand Juries. So we'll have a couple of songs, and we'll be back with Drake and John Darash. Bye for now.
Well, are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready to take a slow ride?
Hi, and welcome back to the second hour. That was two songs there, Fog Hat and Slow Ride, and the second one, Judas Priest and Breaking the Law. And we have a man who's going to show us how to break their law and restore our law in this next hour. So I hope you all enjoy it. First, I'm going to bring Drake back, and then I'll bring John on.
I'll be here.
Right. Are we ready for John?
Hello, John.
Hang on. Can you hear me?
Hi, John.
Yeah, now we can.
Thanks for having us again. Gerard's on with me, too.
Hi, Gerard.
Good. Right. How y'all be?
Good. So where do you want to start this time?
Are we ready
to break
it off in somebody?
Huh?
Are we ready to break it off in somebody?
I think so.
Good. That's what I like to hear.
Yeah, we have our big date coming up, which is going to be June 2nd, and we want to try to get as many people as possible up to Albany. We're going to be in the federal court up there. I got to confirm that tomorrow. I don't see any reason why that would change, but I'm going to try to confirm that tomorrow. I'm going to call the court up and make sure that you know, everything is set properly and they don't have any problems with any of the paperwork or anything. On June 2nd, people from all over New York State and from many other places in the country, I know a lot of the local states will be joining with us. You know, we're getting people in from Pennsylvania, Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island. And we do have people coming from further away, but all of our, you know, sister states, so to speak, we got a lot of commitments from a lot of people that are going to be there on that day in order to hold these people accountable. And so it's going to be June 2nd up in Albany at 9:30 a.m. And I'll just read what we have on our front page of the website. And we got calling all people to Albany, New York on June 2nd, 2014 at 9:30 a.m. at the James T. Foley Courthouse, located at 445 Broadway, Albany, New York, 12207. And we have by wit quo vantos, the people demand the New York judicial stewards to give account of their stewardship. Motions, defenses, excuses, or lawyers will not be heard. Arrest will be demanded, and only the people can make this happen. Only the people can save the republic, so we're asking everyone to be there and pass this word around. So anybody that's in reasonable traveling distance from Albany, New York, if you can make it up there, it's a big date for us. This is what we've been working for a little over a year now to do. And what this federal case will do, I'm 90% positive of this case and that it's going to go through on the 2nd. And we're going for enforcement. We're not asking the federal courts to decide anything for us. We're not asking for their permission. We're telling them we demand enforcement.
Right.
The United States Constitution guarantees a constitutional Republican government. That is literally written in the Constitution, a Republican government, and it is a constitutional Republican government. So there's a guarantee. And should a state be violating that, which is what's happening here in New York and actually in all the states, we've lost control of our judicial process, so we've lost control of everything. And so we're going to the federal government with our guarantee. We want it, and we want it now. And should we be successful, then the whole structure of things in the United States is going to start taking some real major changes very, very quickly. But again, it's all up to the people. It's up to the people getting involved, getting out to the website, nationallibertyalliance.org, signing up, registering on the site. We've got a lot of leadership roles to take place. We're looking for four administrators in every county, just people, and let's take control of our judicial process, and by doing that, we will take control of our political and judicial process. Someone mentioned it's like a magic bullet, and indeed is. I mean, who would ever think that you can do one thing and really take everything back? This is that one thing, And we can take everything back. The only hard part is to get people involvement to actually do it. That's all it takes. Once we open that door, that opportunity, then it's up to the people to step up and take control of their country right there in their counties. That's all it takes.
John, there's a couple of questions here that will give the listeners a better understanding of where you're coming from with these court proceedings. And I'll start off with the first one. What is the significance of having your papers filed and approved by the federal court in this case?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The New York State judicial system has totally collapsed. It doesn't exist. It's not there anymore. We have been robbed, and they have moved up our judicial system throughout the entire United States, as a matter of fact, in every level, whether you're going into a town court, village court, city court, county court, state court, you know, and even on the federal courts. They've moved it into chancery courts, and we have chancellors, and a judge is a chancellor. They're synonymous, and we just wrote a paper on this to make this clear. And with a chancellor, ultimately, he's the king. He acts as the king. He acts on behalf of the king. And so he literally can make the law right off of the bench if he wills it. And we, the people, aren't aware of that, but we're starting to wonder about that, is how is it these people are making these decisions? Well, that's why. But the Constitution, which is the contract, the common law is still there. The district court, the federal district court that we're going to be going to on June 2nd, that is still a Article III court. And an Article III court has two sides to it. It's got equity. They hear equity cases, and they hear common law cases. The problem is that lawyers don't know anything about common law because they're not taught it. Neither do judges because they're not taught it. Because they went to the same bar school, some of them have learned it on their own and realized that they were taught a lie in school. So all they've been taught is the equity side of the court. And that entails, of course, the chancery courts. That's exactly what they are, chancery courts. And you, when you walk into a courtroom in the federal courts or the state courts or the town courts, you're walking in ultimately into admiralty court. And they're ruled by, they make their decisions by corporate charter. It's called codes and statutes. We're under the Constitution, and the Constitution makes it clear, that is the contract, makes it clear we have that opportunity to go in for that guarantee. So that Article III court is then judged above by the United States Supreme Court, which, believe it or not, has really made a lot of great decisions, and they've been doing so for almost 200 years. There have been some bad decisions over the past recent years, particularly I'd say the last 50 years, but not too many of them, because they have been kind of really, you know, ratcheted down by the Constitution. A lot of the bad decisions were made, I perceive, because of the jurisdiction. You know, if they're in the equity side of the jurisdiction, then they have to rule accordingly. If they're in the common law side of the jurisdiction, then they have to rule accordingly. Now, there's a lot of penalty put upon a federal court judge should he rule against the Constitution. Now, it's all about jurisdiction, and it's very tricky. When you go into a courtroom, they're constantly trying to pull you into that equity side. As soon as someone brings up a code or a statute and you don't object to it, they just moved you back onto the equity side of the court. And that's why we have a lot of problems in the court. People do not understand that. You have got to hold your ground constantly. You've got to be pushing constantly for the common law side of the court. And you have to object to everything. You have to understand how the common law works and how the equity works, and make sure you don't let the two get mixed up. And as long as you are very careful with your paperwork and you're careful with anything that they claim or say in the court, and you keep your jurisdiction, that judge now is in a pickle, so to speak, because he has got to rule according to the jurisdiction. And he knows, and he also definitely would know us, that we're going to indict him if he tries to go in a different direction. So he knows that he is susceptible to collateral damage from the higher court, which is the court of record, which is the people, the people's court, and the people themselves. They are the court of record. They are the common law court. The judges are the equity courts, and they have to yield to the common law court. So they know that they're in a pickle if they rule against a case that is really very carefully laid out, the jurisdiction. They're susceptible to monetary damages. They're susceptible of jail time, all kinds of things. Definitely they'll be removed from their authority. They would be in bad behavior, as the Constitution calls it. They serve as long as they are in good behavior. And bad behavior is not holding the Constitution. If they go against the Constitution, that's bad behavior. Unless they're in another jurisdiction, then they can go against the Constitution without worries.
Right, okay. So how high, how significant, again, is obtaining these court proceedings for National Liberty Alliance and the people?
Obtaining what?
The actual court proceedings being approved.
Okay. Yeah, you know, actually what we're doing, we filed the court case in a way that probably has never been done before, but the procedural process is clearly there, and that is the grand jury themselves actually went out to do their work in order to do the work in the court. From within the courthouse, under the auspices of justice, we had to actually go file a case. Now, the case that we filed was not a case, an action at law, although we called it an action at law. It's not a complaint or an action at law where we're suing someone. It's an action at law with a quo warranto, which is an order for them to show cause to the king himself or to the people, because the people are the king, so to the king themselves. And they have to give account. Now, at the same time, because our papers were being rejected and in many times removed from the files as we filed papers, which is all, you know, could be anywhere from 3 years to 20 years in prison for them doing that. So we have 14 judges who are involved in that kind of action, and we have three clerks who are involved in that kind of activity. And so since we couldn't get it to stick in the court, in the records, and they kept hiding it or pulling it out or putting it someplace else or rejecting it, we actually filed a court case. Now, they even actually removed the first court case we filed, and we went to another county, and in that one, the guy understood a little better, and it stuck. So we got all our papers. We filed all our indictments and everything in this court case. So now they're in the file. Now it's a matter of record. What happened was we had a real rogue judge who got together with a county attorney. Both of them are probably, you know, totally brainless between them, you know, because they actually prevented any other new paperwork from being filed. And that became a major problem now. That's a huge crime. And they sent some of it back by mail. So that's 40 years in jail between the two crimes, you know, the two codes that they're breaking for each of them. And not to mention, you know, RICO and conspiracy and other things. But they sent it back, and that's when we decided, okay, it's time to move over to the federal courts because we're only going to be continuing to waste more time. So we moved it over to the federal court and for the purpose of, again, now getting it on the record. Now it's in the federal court, and now we've got all the papers and all of the indictments there, too. This week, we send a letter by snail mail, 11 pages, to every judge, every elected judge in New York State, about 300 letters we sent out. And it informed them of the conspiracy in RICO that was running rampant throughout the state. And we quoted the federal code that they have to obey that requires that if anybody is aware of a conspiracy, to report that to a judge immediately and for that judge to respond on it immediately. So we sent that letter out, giving them notice that there was conspiracy in RICO rampant throughout New York State. And we give them 72 hours to respond. And if they don't respond in 72 hours, then later on in the week we're going to file a paper with the federal court to add to the case to make it even much stronger, which is an indictment on the entire judicial system of New York State. So it's going to be interesting to see what they're going to do with that. whether they're going to, you know, some judge is really going to get up and do something about it. And that gives them the opportunity for New York to take care of its own business. Not that we would drop the federal case, because we wouldn't. Because the federal case here in New York, a win in this case right now in New York is a win in every single county across America, all 3,142 counties, all 50 states, not just New York. And we wrote it up that way. We planned it that way so that when we got to the federal court, this win, you'd be able to take this paperwork and the orders from this judge, if you're in California, Texas, Florida, it doesn't matter where you're at, and you'll be able to get the order, the enforcement.
I'm going to need copies, John.
Well, we're going to get a lot of copies out. But it's going to be an order. It's going to be a an enforcement order where we're demanding that the judge signed a writ of mandamus to all the lower courts throughout all of all of the states, commanding them to receive the people and to make the appropriate take care of the appropriate requirements in order for the people to come into the court to take their seat, their appropriate seat, for administrating to the juries, both grand and trial juries, and also for them to provide providing office space and also a conference area. Well, we would share with others, that would be fine, you know. But a conference area where we can actually have meetings and deal with indictments and discuss things, and also an office space to work from. And if they refuse that in this writ of mandamus, we're demanding that any judge or any clerk that stands in the way of that access of the people into their courtrooms, into their courthouses, that the sheriff is to immediately arrest them. And we'll do an indictment immediately. And if the sheriff refuses to arrest, we're looking for the marshals, for enforcement from the marshals to come in to arrest the sheriff. And then the undersheriff would then have to pick up the rein and do the job, or he would have to be arrested and so on. And so that's kind of how we wrote it up. And anybody who wants to see that paper and how we wrote it up, all you have to do is go up to nationallibertyalliance.org, click on the news tab right up on top, and you will see the latest information. It says, let's see, when did we post this? Posted May 9th, 2014, court date June 2nd, 2014. Stay tuned for details. But right there, you can click on the PDF, the federal case, and the items below it that was filed in the state courts on April 23rd, there are three PDFs below the 5-9. And those are also included in the federal case. In other words, they're attached when we moved it over to the federal case. So you can see the whole case there. But the most powerful part of it, I think, is the main one that we filed with the federal court, which sort of gives a synopsis of the case and lays things out and gives the powerful wherefore clause. We're writing up the mandamus right now as we speak for the judge's signature. And so we're going to anticipate and expect that this judge sign it. And he doesn't have a choice. He has no choice but to sign the order.
Right, okay. What are the implications of the June 2nd court hearings, and what can we expect to follow on from it, John?
Well, like I said, I'm 90% confident we're going to get through. Let's take the 10% that, let's say, we fail. Well, then we would immediately do an indictment for this judge, and we would carry our papers right away to Washington, D.C., and file in the United States Supreme Court. So that's what we would do on that end. And now, the way the Supreme Court works, you have the nine justices up there. They choose what cases they want to take. And there's a criteria for their choosing of cases. And part of that criteria could be just the desire of the judge that really wants to just take that case on for whatever, his great desire. We would kind of hope that, that would be Scalia who would see this to realize that this is the fruit of his works that we've been working on. And so I think he'd have a very heavy interest in this. But they take on the most serious cases. They take on the cases that are very well put together, that clearly the federal court has the jurisdiction. They're very careful not to take a case on where the jurisdiction isn't there. And to be honest with you, I think most of the judges try to stay away from the equity cases. Unfortunately, we do have enemies amongst us, even at the United States Supreme Court level, and so they will take on these equity cases. And these equity cases, that's where you get the bad rulings, where they have to go along with some of this stuff, and they win a case that seems to go against the Constitution, and then people scratch their heads and wonder, well, how the heck did that happen? Well, it happened only because of the jurisdiction. You see, that's the key thing. But we are getting to a point, I think, where we're losing strength in the United States Supreme Court. If we continue too much longer and we lose Scalia and maybe a few others, they're going to be replaced with more Marxists, and then we're not going to have any opportunity of a constitution being upheld by the United States Supreme Court anymore. But right now, the opportunity is still there. And I believe we very clearly fit the criteria, because we're not just New York State, we are nationwide. And we're not just a few counties. We have 10 states totally constituted. I don't know what that means is that, for instance, New York has 62 counties. Each one of those 62 counties has elected to reinstate the common law grand jury formally and with affidavits and with a declaration and proof of authority to be filed with the county and the court clerk. You know, this has been done in all 62 counties, but in some of our counties we haven't filed them yet, but it doesn't matter. We're still constituted. We're there. So we have that's in New York. We also have the same thing in Florida. All of Florida's counties have been constituted. Connecticut, Rhode Island, New Jersey, New Hampshire, Arizona, Massachusetts, Maryland, and Maine. And before the end of this month, we are anticipating Pennsylvania, Washington, state of Washington. Did I say Arizona? Hey, Arizona's already in there. I think Utah is coming up very close. I don't remember. But there are a couple other states. I heard about four or five of them that feel pretty confident that they'll be coming on board by the end of the month. And so that will take our 10 to somewhere between 14 or 15, which brings us very close to a third of the nation. We anticipate the entire nation within the next 3 months, and that's a pretty powerful thing. Now, with that in mind, and all of the people rising up and declaring access into the courts, and to deny us would be a total denial, for instance, of United States versus Williams, which was the case that we're working from that was done in 92 when Scalia wrote the paper on that one for the majority. And he's the one that made it clear and giving tremendous amounts of authorities, where he got it from, that we, the people, have the right to administrate to our own selves for the purpose of the jury, to continue and do the necessity without a connection or any kind of, oversight from a judge or a prosecutor. And that it is totally the people's job. No bureaucrat has anything to do with what we're doing. The United States versus William case is very clear on that. Anybody who goes out to the website on the front page, click on the United States versus Williams, you'll see it right above the video, I think, or right below or above it, I don't remember, but it's right there. And read that case. All the really hot points are highlighted in yellow, and you're going to see a lot of yellow in that case. And when you read through it, you know, you just get blown away of the authority and the power that the people really have and that they're preventing us from taking.
Good.
At least 12.
Yes. Are you coming across a lot of perceived or deliberate ignorance on behalf of the court officials, John?
Say that one more time. I'm sorry.
Are you coming across a lot of perceived or deliberate ignorance on behalf of the court officials?
Well, that's a good question. You know, most of them, I think, are just morons, to be honest, for lack of a better word. I can't think of a better word. Look, these guys are educated, but they're not. They're not educated in law. They're educated in statutes. They're educated in Marxism is what they're educated in. And they don't even do a good job with that. Over the years of battling in the courts and writing papers, I'm just totally amazed at the way these lawyers write papers and even the judges. You know, they use these cases that turn out to be cases of our side. We turn them around and use it against them. And they write like third graders. They don't write very well at all. They don't use any footnotes, hardly at all. And our paperwork is far superior to theirs. Generally speaking, a lot of them are just ignorance. On the one hand, they're not worried about being caught because they're used to getting away with things. They've been living like this for a long period of time. And they know the fix is in. If something happens, yeah, the guy above me will take care of me. He's going to rule on me, and it'll be okay. And, you know, maybe they'll get sanctioned. And they still, you know, hey, they get sanctioned, they still keep their job, you know. In my opinion, they get sanctioned. You did violence against the Constitution. You're out of there. You know, you're off the – that's called bad behavior. You're out of here. You're off the bench. So that's a lot of it. Now, you got the other guys that are not so dumb. They're a little sophisticated. They're chess players, let's say. Those guys are checker players. These guys are chess players. Mostly on the federal level, I think. They're much more sophisticated. They're more highly educated. They are definitely readers. They read the papers. They're very careful in how they rule. And they're concerned about what they see in the papers, if it looks like it's something that's going to stick to them, and therefore they're going to have to rule the right way. So we're going to see what this guy does. I mean, you know, again, there could be a lot of pressure on him from other forces and saying, don't you dare rule for these people. But it would be very obvious to begin with. But again, it's out of our hands. We'll see what will happen. You know, God's in total control of this.
Yes.
Are these the only type? Is New York the only one that's doing these type of high-level filings, or are you aware of other states currently?
Yeah, Florida is very close to doing these things. They're just a few steps behind us, so they're very active out there. California has the potential of doing this. They have the right. There are some people out in California that can do what we're doing, but they're not situated yet enough, but they're not too far behind us. But again, with the case that we wrote, and we've collaborated with Florida, we collaborate with everybody. You know, we tell them what we're doing, and we share, and we try to convince them to do the same thing we're doing. And you know, maybe their own way, of course. Down in Florida, they're chasing the commissioners because the commissioners are preventing them from coming in. Here in New York, we're chasing the judges because it's the judges that's preventing us from coming in. So both is good, both is right. And when you break through one, the other isn't going to step in to do anything. But the key thing here is in New York, like I said, a win in New York on June 2nd is a win in Florida. It's a win in Texas. It's a win in New Mexico, in Alabama. I don't care what state you're in, because we wrote it up for all 50 states. And that means enforcement for all 50 states, for the people to come in to take control of their courts. And this opportunity was there because we're in the federal court now. See, in the state court, you can only deal with the state. But now we're in the federal court. That encompasses the entire nation.
Yes. So we're in their backyard, so to speak. Right. Mm-hmm. Where does Chief Justice Roberts sit in all this, John?
I really don't know. You know, look, I believe that they got guns to these guys' heads. On the one hand, they got to rule right, but certain things they can't do. I remember listening to Roberts when he was before Congress and was coming up to take on as being the Chief Justice, and they asked him some questions, and they did the abortion issue, and he kind of beat around the bush, and he left it with, look, there's so much precedence there, we can't touch it. Well, that's a lie straight from hell from my book, because precedence doesn't mean anything to truth and honesty. So if you have a case that is truly a case that never should have stayed where it was and go forward with it, then just because you have precedence doesn't fix the wrong that's involved there. Now, I know that's an explosive issue, but nevertheless, it's a good example. And so why did Roberts do that? That was the political move. And that gave him the tip of the hat to both sides. And you know, we think it's a tip of the hat from the Republican side to the Democratic side. But the truth of the matter is both the Republicans and the Democrats were looking for that answer. because they want to make sure that whatever has is sitting around in precedence stays. Now, what does that really do in the most highest form? If you look at what we talked about a little earlier, we talked about the Chancery Court. Look, there's nothing more evil and wrong in this nation than that Chancery Court. And yet it's been here it's been here from the beginning. It snuck itself in. It seems to have always been here. It's gotten through. And it's like, well, it's there. It's part of the fixtures. Well, you know what? It's a wrongdoing. There's something evil about it because it takes the people out of their own court. And every court you walk into, every courthouse you walk in across America, when you walk in, you're immediately brought into that equity court. You know, this is the problem. We had the same problem in England. Going back, 1300s, 1400s, same problem. And but you know, in the earlier part, everybody wanted the common law part. But that equity court stayed there. And as time went on, you know, the forces moved more and more. And the people were ignorant to begin with, most of the general public anyway. Little by little, they convinced more and more until they totally destroyed the whole system. And they're fighting there just as much as we are. Same thing happened in America. And so when I walk into a courtroom or you walk into a courtroom, you're not going to a court that's going to give you any protection under the Constitution. You're going into an equity court, and the guy that's ruling there is called Lord High, L-O-R-D-H-I-G-H, Lord High. That's in Black's Law Dictionary. The meaning of chancellor is Lord High. And that tells you something. He's ruling as a king. He's ruling as the Lord, your Lord. And that's a pretty powerful situation for that person to be in and what he could do, and they destroy our lives. Now, that's fraud. And we can take those lords down by sticking to the jurisdiction and holding our case very, very carefully, making sure we never give up that jurisdiction. And you don't appeal. When you open up a court of record, which is what we open up, it's the common law procedure, we don't appeal to the appellate court. That's for the equity courts. It has nothing to do with us. We sue directly the court that we went into. So it's clear that the equity courts are susceptible to collateral damage from the superior court, which is the court of record. And that's what we do. We sue them directly. And a court, you know, a court isn't a place or a thing. A court is a people. In other words, a common law court is the people that's coming into that court. That's what makes the common law court a court. It's the people. On the other side, you get into an equity court, it's the judge and the officers of the court. And they're people too, but they're servants. But they're the officers of the court. They are the court. So when we sue the court, we're suing the people. We're suing them for, you know, going beyond their jurisdiction. And violating, you know, our unalienable rights and hijacking us or kidnapping us into a foreign court. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's what we sue them for.
Oh, yes. All right. Another question for you. Will all court cases be retried under common law after the mass arrests? This is when after the cabal are removed.
You know, That's an interesting that's a problem, okay? And I'm not going to say that I have the answer to that. I will say that there are some – look, we'd start off at the county courts. There are people in county courts that don't belong – that are in county jails that don't belong there. They were arrested because they were driving without a license or their license expired. My goodness, what's wrong with these people? You know, or you got someone who has a weapon on them and they have no bad, you know, they're not doing anything wrong, but they didn't have a permit. You know, they had their permission to have their Second Amendment. You know, those kind of cases that are obvious, we have to deal with. And we'll deal with them swiftly and we'll talk the details later. I don't think it's wise to talk about them now. On the other hand, you know, you do have some serious problems out there because you got people that belong in jail in there. And, you know, you have murderers and, you know, violent people. And what are you going to do with that? I don't know. That's a problem. And we're going to have to pray about that and think about that. And it's going to take, you know, in some cases, the 25 people in the room to think that out and hash it out and figure out how they're going to deal with it. I don't have the answer for that. You know, it's so bad, the system that they have created for us and destroyed the good what we did have. It's hard to figure out the answer. I don't have it.
Yeah, it's going to take a long time after the reset, if you like.
Yeah.
Another question for you, John. It doesn't sound like there's really any way to lose this case, but how might that happen if it's possible?
Well, that's a good question. Look, at they're going to fight back. I don't know how. I don't know how. They don't have a target, you know. I mean, there are so many people involved in this and so many people writing papers, so many people doing things and leading, and they don't know who they are. We don't give our names. They may have a few of our names. They may know a few of us, but taking a few of us down isn't going to take the system down because we're many thousands now. It's not easy for them to come at us in the way they usually do. So what could they do? They can go to this judge and make him take the fall and to stall us, really. And then to get us to the United States Supreme Court, you know. Can or will they do the same to them? You know, look, I think Scalia was taking his life in his hands when he ruled on this case and wrote the paper the way he did. You know, he didn't have to write what he wrote. The case could have been settled and nobody could even have known much about it. But he made this case so powerful on what we're doing. So he took a chance and put his life in his hands, in their hands, I believe. And now we're coming back up maybe before him. We might end up back in for him with his own case. And, you know, I believe I heard he's hitting 80s or he's in his 80s. He's up there. He's got children. He's got grandchildren. He's got family. He's got friends. He's got neighbors. I believe he's an American. I believe he knows. I know he knows what's going on. It's clear to me. A lot of people say, he's the enemy. No, I don't believe so at all, not one for a second. Nevertheless, the bottom line is this. I think he's willing to give his life. He figures he's at the end. You know, those of us who are willing to do that, you know, what are you going to do with those people? They're going to do what's right. That's it. And they're afraid of that. I think there are a lot of us. I don't know what they can do because I think they got a problem. They could pull the plug early. Maybe that's what they can do. We could be, you know, but God has a way of blinding people too. So they're doing that big a threat to the higher up as yet. Maybe they don't really understand. I don't know. We haven't been on network or anything. I mean, we're still grassroots. Your program is the biggest program we're on. Most of the programs a lot smaller, you know, and that's how we've been growing, grassroots.
Yes.
You know, we know the people in New York on a higher level, the criminals. You know, look at, you're going after criminals. They know we got them. Okay, they know it. It's only about the time. And so they're looking at all these skeletons, and they're so worried about saving their own rear ends, you know. And I think they're frightened, and when people are frightened, they don't think straight. I think they make more. Well, they definitely make more mistakes. They've added to the case so much. They made it very rich for us. They've given us a lot of evidence against them, and so, you know, it just gets worse and worse and worse. And remember, the higher level of New York isn't the higher level that you're talking about. So who knows what they know, and who knows what they think about us.
Well, you know, what you're saying there in a panic, it's like a micro to the macro with the cabal. They're all shooting each other down as well. It's a case of I'm going to save my neck and let the others sink. And that helps us in many ways, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Hey, Gerard, if you're there, if you want to pipe in on this, you know. You know, Gerard mentions that they're dying a death of 1,000 cuts. Because we're coming at them from so many different directions. I mean, they have technology, and they have a lot of things on their side, but they don't have God. That's for sure. That's pretty clear, and they're stuck up. You know, they think better of themselves than what they are, and that in itself is a problem. You know,
and the losing.
That's what the problem is. I've talked to Neil Keenan considerably about all of this and a lot of other people, and basically they are people who do not feel that they are going to be impacted or affected by anything that people do, whether it's logistics through you or whomever.
What's funny now, and this is, I've covered this in the show just a few minutes ago, we're about to drop a hammer on their head. The international part of it that I've been working with is about to come unglued, and they are in a panic over that. Now, this goes hand in hand with what you got, and it looks like they're going to get shot at from about five different ways at the same time.
That's right. That's right. And you got this thing happening in Washington, you know, the spring thing. There's a lot of things going on.
Tomorrow.
Rod, did you want to pipe into some of this?
I kind of talk, but I don't think, can you hear me?
We didn't hear anything. Yes. Now we can hear you. Speaking,
I just made a comment that, you know, look, they dumbed our schools down, and now they're forced to hire that dumbed-down workforce. So they're working at a disadvantage. I mean, just call any government agency and try to get something done, and you know what you're working with there. You know, so I think there's a lot of confusion. I don't think that they're as efficient as they want us to think they are. I think there's a lot of psyops. Now, don't get me wrong. They may have particle beam weapons and all this stuff, but they can only use them limitedly. They're not going to waste those weapons on little folk, you know what I'm saying? And and there's so many of us out here doing so many things now, I don't know. I don't think they know which way to swap, to be honest with you, you know? And I don't even really believe that they understand the full, gravity of what we're doing. They think we're just a couple of little people. You know, they probably looked at our background. He said, what's he know? He's a construction guy. What's he know? He's a broken-down mechanic. These guys aren't, you know, anything. you know, so I think they tend to underestimate, you know, and I'm just hoping that by the time they realize what's going on, it will be too late. That, you know, that the people will have woken up and we'll have gotten what we need. And it'll be a fight either way. I mean, look, we got a lot of cleaning up to do. The place is a mess, you know. So, you know, that whole business is going to be hard. You know, once we get in, there's going to be an awful lot of cleaning to do. But it'll be a different fight. It'll be a refreshing.
Yes, I agree. Jake, what you mentioned before about they think they're immune, I think for the listener's point of view, that's the top end of this cabal, because I don't think the middle or lower end are as as tough and rough as the top end.
Well, that's not exactly the case. What it is that each of the different levels have different assignments of accomplishment. And to keep things running, keep the status quo going, and that sort of thing. So even the lower end, down at the county level, does have an impact, because you're at the soldier level in that respect, okay? Taking this through to federal brings it up to middle management. Now, what we're getting ready to do is lop the head off the snake, pretty much. And so, and this is coming fairly soon, and they're not going to like anything we've been doing. And they're also going to find themselves in an extraordinarily tight position. And by that, I mean both monetarily and legally, as well as then we pop other things in the middle of the, you know, parade. And then, you know, John's eating them up from one end, we're eating them up from the other. I'd say that they're probably in trouble, big time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too. And again, they're so arrogant, they may not realize how dangerous we are to them.
The other thing we've witnessed is they don't have any trouble throwing the lower echelon people under the bus.
Yep.
And that's going to become very apparent very quickly. They're going to lose their bottom end really fast when the people, those lower people, those so-called useful idiots that they use, realize that there's no protection for them and that they're using them. That's where they're going to lose their cooperation first, and that's going to be a problem for them, because they're going to lose the ground floor where they're standing on. You know, if they can't get into the counties and they can't keep the counties and the towns doing what they want, they're dead. They're done, because that's where it's done. That's where the cooperation starts, and then it goes up.
Yeah, they have to control the grassroots level.
Yep. Bit by bit, they're losing it. You must, to you, John, again, you must be, are you surprised at the speed and the depth that this has gone?
Well, yeah, again, we never anticipated to do the whole nation. Our focus had been on New York, and then it moved very quickly, and, of course, the nation moved very quickly. I remember when we got the first couple of states on with us, and then before you know it, we were at 50 states, and in 1 year, what we had accomplished is, we never expected anything like this. So we know we're on to something. Anybody who really takes a look at the website and reads just watching the video and reading the front page, okay, tells you who we are and what we're trying to do. And I think it's a powerful message. I mean, liberty is a powerful message, and that's what we're offering here, taking it back. And our founding fathers put the mechanisms in there to control it, and with those same mechanisms, we could take it back and take control. And so that has moved very extremely fast. And, on the one hand, when you're in the battlefield, it feels like it's taken a long time. But then when you turn around and take a look, you say, wow, we got here pretty darn quick. And here we are going up to the federal court, and we're at a situation. We're learning as we go, too. And, we've worked a lot of the details out as far as the process and the procedure and the way things work. But there are little things that we didn't know, and you really can't know till you start to get some experience. And one of the things we didn't realize or think about was that if we got into the federal court, again, we just only recently, the past few months, really come to an understanding how to control the federal court through the jurisdiction. But on the very minute details, in the places where you really lose it, and most people don't realize it. But when we look to see, and get involved in there, in a federal court, we didn't realize until we started writing the papers, wait a second, this isn't just for New York. We can write the paper for every county in the nation. So a win on a federal court anywhere with a properly written paper wins everywhere, which means enforcement everywhere, which means if we're successful and they sign the paper on June 2nd, which means on June 3rd, we literally will be moving into the courts, taking the nation back. That potential is there. Are we really ready for that? A lot of places we are. New York's ready for that. Florida's ready for that. Connecticut's ready for that. Jersey's ready for that. Maryland, Massachusetts ready for that. We're still shoring up in those places. But a lot of the other states, they're still running a little behind, and maybe half the state can move in and start taking. And of course, this will start. It'll become a vacuum, I think, and people will come in quickly. But what people have to understand is the people who are going to take these leadership positions, which are full-time jobs, these are going to require an education, and we'll all be on a job training. But we will be educating. We're putting an educational system together as we speak. Of a 120-hour course, and all of that is already online on our website, but we're going to put it together in a formal way where people literally take a half hour, an hour at a time to a process of 120 hours, and they're asked 600 or plus questions throughout the whole course, and they have to get 100%, and that means that whatever you miss, you've got to go back and review, find the answers, and then put the answers in, but that's how the course is going to go. And when you get to the end of that course, you will understand your job and what you're doing. Until then, you'll wing it. You'll take guesses. You'll do the best you can. You'll pray about it. You'll rely on other people who know. You'll ask for assistance from people who have more knowledge. And you'll figure it out as you go. As far as a jurist is concerned, anyone can learn to be a jurist in one day. We teach the principles, the three principles, a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. That's the principle you rule from. Every time you make a decision, is it an honorable decision? Have we considered mercy? Are we being just? And the two major maxims of law that guide us into the case itself. One maxim of law is in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. No injured party, there is no crime, and the state cannot be an injured party. Okay. Another
I don't know how this fits, Don. I really don't know how this fits, but my level of mercy for the people that have been doing this to us for so long and the manner in which they've been doing it, I got about the same amount of mercy as a concrete block.
Well, look, I understand there are problems and we get anger and so on and so forth, but we still have to consider mercy in order to get the blessings of God in this whole thing. And there are places where people need mercy, you know, the people who are just dumb, okay, and have no clue what's really going on.
Well, here's the problem. What we discovered when we started doing the international portion of it was just exactly how deeply this goes. That's one of the main things that really kind of blew everybody's mind. Okay, now here's the other part. And the other part is that there are a load, and I mean a large load, of people who know exactly what they're doing and are doing it purposely and think it's comical to watch people suffer.
Well, you're talking
That's
about
where the
evil kind
of talk comes
You're talking
in.
About evil people. I don't think they're going to get much mercy. When that is laid out, you know, and here's the other thing. Look at, you know, we, you know, as far as we, when I say myself and Gerard and many, many other people that are building this thing, we're the administrators. And we ourselves don't sit on the grand jury or the trial jury. Clearly, we can't sit on the trial jury because we already are biased because we're going up against people we believe are guilty to begin with. But we have the opportunity to train the people who are going to hear the case, and we're going to train them in the principles of God that God has set forth for justice, you know. And we're
I understand and I agree with what you're saying exactly.
Exactly. And I'm telling you, there's going to be a lot of people on the end of the short rope. I agree. But, again, the people are going to make that decision. I don't think they're going to give as much mercy as maybe I might think they should have. And I don't know that they should because you really can't judge a case until you've heard it all. I know that these people are guilty. I know they need to be dealt with, and I know they need to be dealt with harshly. But I can't say until you hear the case, you don't know. You don't make a decision on a case until all the facts are in and people make the decision. So,
I understand and I agree.
The principles are the key. Those three principles.
I understand that. Now, the other part that we discovered was
that
there's
also... But there was one other maxim that I'd like to just get out, and then I'll be quiet for a minute. And that is that for every injury, there must be a remedy. So we have to always realize there's an injured party somewhere when you have a problem happen, a crime or something. And so, therefore, you know, that has to be balanced into the equation. How do we fix the person who has been injured? Now, the people we're going after, which on a higher level, they've injured so many people, there's no way that they can pay any restitution. We could just seize everything they have, and it's about it. And then justice has to be met. And if justice is the extreme, which is what you're talking about, then justice is the extreme. I don't want people to think we're on a witch hunt because we're not.
Well,
we just want our country.
I want to qualify what I said, too. Now, there are some that need the concrete block. There's also a lot of them, that, as I said, that need, as you said, need forgiveness, healing, things of this nature. Now, here's what I've found, along with some other people that work internationally, and that is a lot of these large groups that normally would go along with the status quo because they don't have much choice are more than willing to get out of the problem and help us out. So I look at that as a very, very positive stand in terms of when these things start coming about. And this is a big portion of what I'm looking at. Now, there's a lot of freedom people, militias, et cetera, people, regular old people that want to be free, et cetera, who are at some point or another awake to an extent. And these people are already... They're ready to go. Ring the church bell, and we'll be down to the courthouse. You also are going to have a large number of groups that people think are nasty, bad, and they didn't have a choice. Either we get to watch our kids get roasted, or we comply. And everybody knows what a parent's going to do with that. And so, when you got somebody and you're really squeezing them, you can cause them to do some bad things. But you also have to understand that there's a large number of people who really didn't even want to get involved in the first place and had no choice. So I have to, you know, if I were adjudicating something of that nature, I would definitely take all that into account. Now, the other part, specifically, from the soldier level up to the lower middle management, there's a lot of people who know where the skeletons are hidden, a lot of people who know... or have documentation or et cetera. Those people that help us
as far as I would be concerned, should be exonerated. They helped us out. They helped us take care of the problem. So I don't see any problem with just not worrying about it. What do you think?
Yeah, and again, you know, bear in mind the level that we're coming in at, and not when I say we, I'm including you too. We're coming in from the grand jury level, and you know, I sit on the grand jury right now with many other people for the purpose of going through the process to get into the courts, and also we will continue to sit on the grand jury during the process of bringing these people on the state level into order, law and order, meaning the Congress and the Senate and the governor, and making sure that their house is in order. And once that job is done and we start to look at other cases where people will be bringing cases to us, or we're going to be considering cases, you know, for instance, through the county that we spoke about earlier, people arrested with because they were driving without a license or some stupid thing in a jail. You know, those things, a lot of those things, that's going to be a grand jury that we will be pulling out of a pool. We're the administrators of the grand jury. But we sit at the grand jury only in the beginning to get control. Once the people get control, we pass it to the people, and it'll always be a new grand jury. I think grand juries should be turned over at least once every week or two. Trial juries, you know, by the trial. It is what it is. And we shouldn't overburden people, requiring them to be somewhere for 3 months or 6 months or a year like they do in the federal government. Not the federal government, but in the state governments. And I'm sure the federal, too, maybe. I don't know. But they get a jury that's a real good puppet for them, and really they want to keep on. They don't want to let them go because they get the turnover of all this income coming through, you know. And but anyway, you know, we're going to teach the people the principles. We're going to teach the people the maxims, and then they have to get in there and figure out the justice. That's not going to be my job to do it. They're the ones who's going to have to figure it out. Now, a lot of the things we'll be able to make deals with, okay, as long as the injured parties agree, you know, you don't even have to take it into the full grand jury, or you don't, and then the grand jury doesn't have to send it to the trial jury. You know, they'll admit that they're guilty of something, and they can, whoever the injured party was, you can work it out, that's fine. But on the level that you're talking about, and I'm talking about also, you're talking about evil, pure evil, they got to go to trial. And I know the end results of that trial. When people understand what they've been doing and the amount of damage and destruction they have done and their parents have done, because this goes back generation to generation to generation with these people, you know how they're going to end up. We don't need to talk about it. We already know.
Yeah. Right, okay, John. Drake, we've gone past the top of the hour. John, can you stay with us to the end, you got? Yeah,
no problem.
Right, okay. Right, we'll have.
What are you take a break for right now? 10 minutes?
Yes,
5 minutes?
Yeah, be about 8 minutes.
Right, I'll go get some water.
Got a couple of songs. The first one.
You'll mute us while you're on. Okay, mute us because Gerard and I might talk in the background then.
All right.
Okay.
I'll bring you back soon.
All right.
All right, so this first song is will be a reminder of June the 2nd for John.
Hi, and welcome back to the final hour this evening. Two songs there, ELO, Showdown, and the second one, Canned Heat, Let's Work Together, which is what we're all doing, which is good. And on that note, I'll bring Drake back, and John, if you're both ready.
I'm here.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
Drake?
Gerard, you here?
I'm in here somewhere.
Right, okay. Right, I've got some more questions for you, John.
Yeah, Drake comes in a little low. I don't know if he's coming in low to you, but you're coming in fine, but he's coming in low to
you. Yeah, we've had issues in the first hour before you came on, John. They were cutting Drake's mic out. So there's been fun and games tonight with Drake's mic. Apologies to the listeners for that, but it's out of our control. Question for John. If you get sheriffs to make arrests based on the findings of common law grand juries, how are you going to make the district attorneys actually prosecute the cases?
Oh, not a problem at all. Look at the first order of business for the sheriffs to make arrests is a federal court order. They have no choice. And the indictments to go through is also part of that court order, so the prosecutors have nothing to say about that. The key thing is getting into the court and a seat. Once we get into the court, a seat in the court, when we're operating out of the court under the auspices of justice, at that point, everybody has recognized the authority of the people, and they've taken a seat in their proper place, and whatever they do is going to be acknowledged and dealt with. So one of the first order of business is dealing with the prosecutors to let them know, don't think that he can call any of those puppet juries anymore, because that's a wrongdoing and we're going to indict you. You need a jury, you give us a yell and we'll pull the people together for you to take a look at what you think you have. And so they won't be in control. You see, right now the prosecutors are in control, the prosecutors and the judges. So it gets right back to that bar scene again. The bar scene is everywhere and everywhere in all the political realms, and obviously the judicial realms. But the bottom line is that the first order of business is with that prosecutor to put him in his place. And, of course, with the judge to let him know. When a grand jury writes up an order for an arrest because of maybe someone contempt of to the jury, or they don't show up and we want them brought in, the judge doesn't have a choice. The judge is a magistrate. All he does is he's kind of handling the king's seal, so to speak, for the arrest. And that's the way it's always been. The king's wish is everyone's command. The king wishes and puts the seal. Actually, the king did the wish and the seal. We have the magistrates to do the seal. So we do the wish, we send the paperwork in, and he puts the seal, which is his signature, and that goes after the sheriff, and the sheriff goes on arrest, and that's it, game over. Prosecutor doesn't have the opportunity to get involved in it. Now, if we feel that the prosecutor is not going to do his job and not prosecute correctly, we just put on a special prosecutor. But if we continue to feel that way, we'll have to investigate him or her and maybe get rid of them. I think when we're at this point, they're going to get it, and they're just going to be doing their job, because they're not going to be controlled by the bar anymore. They're going to be controlled by the wheels of justice, and that wheels of justice is the people working the system. And our courts will be as honest and as just as we, the people, will be. And that's why we teach people they have to have the principles. And, you get into your prayer closet and talk to God yourself and work things out. But when you get into this situation, you have to be as just as you could possibly be, because otherwise we're just going to become them. That's all.
Yeah. What are the implications for the bar lawyers following
well, that's interesting.
The reinstatement of basically the Republic?
Yeah, we don't have to do anything with them, because, you see, first of all, bar lawyers, the way they're going and the knowledge that they've learned and what they apply in as law, they're going to lose every case they go in after. Who's going to hire a lawyer anymore, And they'll hire real lawyers, people who are, common law lawyers. But they're not going to hire bar lawyers, bar attorneys. The smart ones will move very quickly to learn the common law because they already know the process and the procedures of the court, so all they have to do is learn the common law. And that's pretty easy. You know, you look at a lot of the United States Supreme Court rulings, you look at the Founding Father stuff, you look at the Constitution, and you put it all together. And so the guys who pick up on it quickly, they'll switch over real quick and start to execute the common law, and they'll drop their bar licenses. I mean, why would they have it anymore? That's only going to control them. They'll say, hey, don't do that. You get. Why am I going to listen to that guy? I just scared of him.
Yeah, when the Republic's restored, surely they're not entitled to go in the courtroom as a bar lawyer. Surely not.
Well, again, I think it'll fall away on its own, but at some point, yeah, that'll have to come to terms. But I think when we get around to that part, I think they'll all be gone. I really do. A lot of judges, I think they're going to disappear. They're going to be on the lam, so to speak, because they've got way too many skeletons in their closets, and they're going to be always looking over their shoulder, and they're not going to be able to live with that pressure. So a lot of them, I think, will disappear. Justice will catch up with them eventually, if not in this world, in the world to come, so we don't need to worry too much about that. You know, there's a lot of things that we can do, and it's probably just not wise to talk about yet. We'll get into the power, and when that next step comes up, you know?
Right, okay. I'm going to mix the questions up now. One for Drake. Drake, you mentioned that most of our law enforcement and sheriffs are on our side. Do they know that if they wait till the last minute to take action, that their reputations could be tarnished?
Yeah, they understand that. The problem is that they're not in a position to actually take the initiative. We need to basically initiate things. What John's doing and what I'm doing in combination will initiate these things. In other words, then at that point, I expect to get a load of calls and letters from people I don't even know, in terms of regards to, hey, where can I get involved? Now, I work with a whole bunch of these freedom efforts, a whole bunch of Facebook pages, as many people as I can get to normally. And the response basically is that they found out that what I am and how I am, and they like what they hear. So, you know, you add a little intel to that, and the fact that things are actually going on, then people are beginning to, they're really, you know, kind of excited about it, to be, you know, from what I'm getting. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to, you know, doing a number on a bunch of the bad guys, basically.
Yes. Okay. Next question is for you, Drake. Given what's happening tomorrow, I know we've kind of answered this question before, but with it being tomorrow, what is the truth concerning Operation American Spring? Is it a globalist Pentagon CIA FBI operation to foment a revolution to eliminate the people's chances of succeeding in overthrowing the corporation?
Well, my take on it is this. First of all, I haven't seen these rallies actually produce the crowds that they would like to produce. That's first. Number two, unless there is a million or more who show up, that could be a problem, especially seeing as how somebody said that they were coming. Whether the people are going to bring arms and, you know, really look at it as, you know, time, I don't know. Whether it'll turn into a problem like is going on in the Ukraine, that's a possibility. And by that, I mean there's a load, and I meet a large number of people out there who have been more than ready to go for quite some time and are very frustrated. And I apologize to everybody, but there's nothing I can do and nothing anyone else can do to hurry up a process that's very as intricate as some of the legalities we're dealing with, some of the things we're doing. John can attest to the complications of what you have to do and how correct you have to be. So we want to make sure we get this right, because I think, as I have seen everything, this is about our last shot. So, I think American Spring would be a great deal if you get like a million people. If you get a small group, you're looking at a lot of arrests and stuff like that. If you get an extraordinarily large group, Probably not, as long as they are well behaved. Now, that's the other part. How is this going to play out? So I'm going to wait and see. Okay?
Yes. All right, next question for John. Where are we? This person's in Pennsylvania, and their county sheriff has openly spoken out that she is a constitutional sheriff. The problem, she says, is her hands are tied because her duties, statutes, only allow her to transport prisoners, etc. Can the common law grand jury process reinstate her to full duties as a sheriff, or what has to happen for any sheriff in this situation?
If the common law grand juries fail to reinstate the sheriff to their proper position, then we failed. We have to. Look at any police officer, any law enforcement agent on the state level that does not belong to the sheriff's department or whatever you want. I don't know if the word department is the right word, but to belong to the sheriff's is not a legal law enforcement agency. In other words, the New York City police, the Philadelphia police, the town police, the village police, they're not legal. They're corporate law enforcement agents. They work for a corporation. And if when the corporations are seized back and brought back and then the revealing of the true trust, which is the real government, is there, they shouldn't be dabbling in police enforcement. That's the sheriff's job. It's a county-by-county job. And you take, like, for instance, New York City. New York City comes together in five boroughs. They got one sheriff controls the whole thing, and the sheriff isn't even elected. He's appointed by the mayor. So you know how that whole – it's all political, it's a political thing. And those five boroughs, each one of those boroughs, which is a county, deserves a sheriff. Elected by the people, and that sheriff is responsible for all of the law enforcement agents. It's on his head. This is not a political position where he answers to the governor or to the mayor. He answers to the people themselves, and he does his job, or he gets fired, and he goes up for election every 4 to 6 years, whatever Congress, you know, the legislators decide that's in their power, whether it's a 4-year term or a 6-year term. But that's the bottom line on that. As far as the New York City Police, they have to change their cars. They have to turn over to the Sheriff's Department. Deputies is what they need to become, and then work for the elected law enforcement agent. And that's true in every county across America. That's where it has to be. And the sheriff is responsible in the state of emergency. Nobody's got a higher rank than the sheriff, not even the governor himself, in the state of an emergency inside that county if there's havoc going on. The sheriff is what has to keep the peace. He's the peacekeeper. He's the one that has to make sure that the Constitution is in effect. Now, of course, he would work with the governor's office and so on. But ultimately, the forces come from his the sheriff's office and the people themselves. We get back to militia. You know, one of the first order of businesses I want to see is the armory reopened right down the block from me. It's closed up with bars and broken windows, and it's probably empty, and we need to refurbish that. We need to bring that back and restock it with arms and ammunition. And in a state of an emergency, the sheriff can call to the people, and the people can meet him at the armory. They'll be trained, you know, a little bit here and a little bit there is the militia. That's the only protection of our government is the sheriff and the militia.
Right, okay. Next question, John. Do you have any constitutional lawyers working for the National Liberty Alliance?
We have no lawyers.
No lawyers. Right, okay. Question for, where are we? Another one for you somewhere. Regarding application of grand jury arrests, who will carry out the acts of arrest in Washington, D.C., as it has no sheriffs?
Well, I wouldn't worry about Washington, D.C. until you have all of the states, come back under the common law. And I think that'll happen very quickly. Then what happens when you turn the lights on and you have roaches and rats? You know what happens?
Yeah.
Well, when the lights go on, when the state's lights go on, and shine in Washington, I think you're not going to be able to find them. We're going to be looking in on islands and other countries.
Right, okay. All right.
Question. Washington, D.C., you know, they have to control the states in order to stay, keep their power. They can't keep control of the states. Once you take the state, once the people take control of the states, they take control of their Congress, and they take control of their Senate. And we have to give the Senate back to the state Congress. You know, that's where it belongs, the legislators. They're the ones that should be electing senators. That was the 17th Amendment. It was destructive. But in any event, once you take your senators back and you take your congressmen back and you read the right after them, obey the law and support the Constitution or go to jail when you come back to this, believe me, they're going to do the right thing. Right there, once you have 26 states that do that, game over in Washington.
Yes. Right, next question is for Drake. Drake, once again, we are hearing rumors about boots on the ground and imminent mass arrests from both Tom Hennigan and Benjamin Fulford. If true, I find it very interesting that it is occurring around the same time as Operation American Spring. Your thoughts, please.
Well, I don't mind piggybacking and all that and having fun with it. The thing is that Neil and I have been working on this stuff for, better part of 2 years. He's been working on it longer than that. I've been working on other ways. I'm an objectionist anyway, so they got to deal with my obtuse personality when I get bent out of shape. And to take it a step further, the interesting part is that when people finally have had enough, whether it's through legalities, finance, protest, or what, you at least get to express yourself at the top of your lungs. You at least get to scream through the law into the judge's ear instead of having him ignore you like you're a piece of something that shouldn't be allowed out of the toilet. These things, as everybody knows, has been going on way too long, and the rectification is coming hard. And they don't have a choice. The problems that everybody has had is a lack of, quote, enforcement. This is also in the works. There's a whole bunch of things going on that these guys got no clue to. This is one of the reasons for the paranoia, and you won't feel it real big, not yet. After a few of these things start happening, you'll be able to feel it. It'll be thick enough that you can cut it out of the air with a knife. Some of the stuff we're going to do is going to give all of these BS artists a very tight, hard weightlifter wedgie. Okay?
Right. Next question is for you as well, Drake.
Okay.
In order to isolate and cut off the cabal with no-fly zones, how about also freezing and deleting their assets and bank accounts so they don't have a way to hire or pay any mercenaries?
Well, we're just about at the point of doing that now. This is a part of what the Neil lawsuit is about. You can look on, I think it's still posted somewhere in the archives on the webpage. The new one coming out is a little more succinct and quite a bit more accurate. So what we'll be dealing with is a situation where, when I say a weightlifter wedgie, I'm not kidding. They can't go anywhere. What are they going to do? What are they going to do sitting in their underwear on the curb? They're going to learn how it feels from our side. They've been stomping on us, draining us dry, sucking us clean, just like a bunch of vampires that they are, and we've had to put up with it. Well, both legally and morally, now it's their turn to understand what it's like to have had and now have squat. Now, this means that a lot of the FEMA camps that get filled with these dinks, a lot of these people that supposedly have such large bank accounts, we can feed a lot of people with that, reopen the homeless shelters, fund clinics for the veterans like they're supposed to be treated, you know, all of this stuff that's been going on, it's funky, nasty. And I'm going to be pushing, and this is something everybody can pay attention to. I'm going to be pushing hard for arrests to be made for manslaughter. 40 dead veterans because they don't want to treat them, and they want to get bonuses, so they dummy up stuff. And they don't cut it with me. If these people will not take the bull by the horns and take the correct remedy, the correct action, in order to make sure not only this never happens again, but that the people responsible are held personally, directly, lawfully, legally, and morally responsible for that and their actions, along with all the other stuff, you know, then there are other forms of justice that I don't have any control over, and they're going to experience it. I can tell you that right now. There are some people out there who are deadly, and they're not very happy. They're rather pissed. They're upset with the combination of the variety of the economics, that's first. Number two, the morality, the lack, total lack of morality of these people, and the fact that they think it's funny. And these people are armed. These people are good at what they do. And I would, if I was these guys, I'd make sure the alarm's turned on at night. You're liable to get visited. Just that simple. I mean, people talk about justice, and you're liable to get a good firsthand taste of it. Next.
Right, next question is for John. I think this question's a bit naive or unresearched, but I'll ask it anyway. John, so far your efforts have yielded no results. You said you'd contacted sheriffs, marshals, and other law enforcement, and so far no arrests.
Right.
All the court cases have been dismissed. Don't you think it's time to call on the militia? Well, all the court cases haven't been dismissed, the person who asked that question.
Well, first of all, we don't have militias everywhere, especially in New York here. We do have some, but they're far and in between. But
yeah,
that's not the way to go. You have to go through the judicial process first. And all our court cases have not been dismissed or anything. They've been illegally shut out, and it wasn't totally unexpected, but we had to go through the process, and that's more evidence against these people. They are desperate. And we always knew that there was a good chance we'd have to come up to the feds for this. But we were hoping that we might be blessed with a guy that would sit on the bench, but we never even got that opportunity, so we didn't get there. Now, as far as enforcement, look, it is absolutely crystal clear. The sheriffs have a major problem, and I didn't realize this, you know, because I didn't work it out. I didn't puzzle through it enough until we actually got to this point where we started to pressure an arrest with the sheriff. And we went with affidavits and everything, and at first they didn't see, and I realized that these guys, they don't have the ability to understand. They don't understand the law. They don't understand the Constitution, so they don't have the ability to see that the law is really being broken. But we did have the opportunity to speak with an investigator with the sheriff's office who entertained us and would listen to us. And he was against it at first, and he was telling us that U.S. codes, this, that, or the other thing, you know, you can't apply them. And clearly this was U.S. code violations, but it was also New York code violations. But we told him he was wrong, and he told me that he had a law degree and that we were wrong. And I said, no, you're wrong. Well, let me show you something. And we showed him the supremacy clause, which he had never seen, obviously, because they don't teach you that in law school. And he had to read it through twice, and he even walked away and came back and said, you know, you're absolutely right. And then they started to talk about how we can go to arrest. He said, look, we really can't make an arrest on this level with the people that we're going after and with the charges that we're going after without really getting people, you know, that are on the prosecutor's level. So he sent us up to talk with the prosecutor. Now, we thought this prosecutor might be a guy that would work with us because of some of his background. But a lot of that is really fairyland, just, you know, fairy tales. It's not, you know, this is just gets them elected, I think, in my opinion. So,
yes.
But anyway, we went up and talked with him, and he just certainly wasn't interested. Then it dawned on me from talking with the sheriff and understanding what he was saying and in talking with this guy in the middle of our conversation, I realized this guy's not going to do nothing, number one. Number two, even if the sheriff did go out and arrest these people, the prosecutor's going to set him free and he's going to ream the sheriff and learn, don't you ever do that again. And he'll get the judges behind him and everything else saying, don't you ever do this again. You come talk to us before you make these kind of arrests. Because they're all under control. So there's no way you can get the sheriffs to really do these things without getting some other kind of support. And we realize that now. And that's when we started thinking about potentially marshals. But we never went to the marshals, so we didn't have that discussion. And when we got into the courts and we were going to go up to the courts, the guy threw the case out within 2 days, the judge, said that the people don't have standing in their own courts. And also started to send it. We sent papers in immediately. We sent them a writ of error and a few other things. And they sent them right back. When we went to force them through the sheriff, this is a different county now, the sheriff refused to serve the papers, so they had gotten to him. So then we went down to the county clerk, who we knew the law, and he had accepted the papers. And we were met by him and the county attorney. And the county attorney stepped in the way and says, we're refusing the papers, we're not going to take it. So the county clerk didn't refuse them, but the county county attorney did, who doesn't have the authority to do that, by the way. And her and the judge worked together on this. That's when we realized, well, okay, we don't need any more. We can now go to the feds. Now we're going to the federal court. Before you get to a point where you have to lock and load, you have to go through all the regular remedies first. We have to be patient, and we have to see what we can get through the system. Ultimately, we got to trust in God in this. That's my personal opinion. And so we're going through all the appropriate steps. You're doing all of the right things. Look, when you get to the point and there's nowhere else to go, then people have to maybe start thinking about that because there is nothing else to think. And that's what our founding fathers did. They took it to as far as they can go, and they finally came to the only solution that was left. We're not at that only solution yet, and we better execute and exercise everything we possibly can. Who knows? God may look down and bless us. And if he does that and we're in the courts, he's going to bring justice back. And what better way to bring justice onto these people than for the people to bring justice onto these people? They're ready to clamp down on the entire world to take the prize. They've been working at this for hundreds, perhaps thousands of years, these families. And they are at a point where they have the technology and the ability now to do this. And here they are. They're controlling every aspect of our lives. And they've controlled us and made us very well controlled slaves. And they're ready to just take that final clamp and eliminate most of the population of the world and take control of what they think is theirs, the earth and everything in it. And just as they're ready to do it, all of a sudden, justice gets up and just clamps it down on them. I mean, what better judgment that God can put upon them than that?
Well, thanks for that, John. Next question's for Drake. Drake, do you think the militias, the sheriffs, the marshals, and the U.S. military are ready to uphold the constitutional oaths to take the government back from domestic enemies called cabal?
Well, I've been doing some checking, and there's a lot more militia people than I thought. I had been misinformed by some people about the numbers. There's also a large contingent of people who are armed and don't know what to do about it. The militias are exercising a combination of training so that they don't shoot themselves in their foot or whatever, as well as maintaining control. In other words, you don't end up with a nutcase with a gun. The people I've spoken to are more than ready. There are a large contingent of people out there also, as John mentioned, who are ignorant as to what is involved in this, what it means, what their office entails, what they're supposed to know, and how they're supposed to act or take actions accordingly. So, yes, and partially, and in some cases, no. Okay?
Right. To the person who was asking about Dr. Jim Garrow on as a guest, we are looking into that. We'll report back when we find out more about that. Question for Drake again. Is there any update about the Bundy Ranch situation?
I stay informed on that regularly, and so far nothing's happening. Now, what they're trying to do is they're trying to play legalistics, and the problem with that is that's already been decided. Now, here's the crux of the problem. The court records were sealed. So what's going to have to happen is that they're going to have to. They won't have a choice. They're going to have to reopen them. And when they do, then the federal government, land management, and all these other podunks are going to be found in error big time. You can't sell somebody land and then just arbitrarily confiscate it. Don't work that way. And there's been a big problem, and this has been a big stink. People who fall under eminent domain and other land grab schemes, whether it's federal government or who it might be, have not been getting fair market value. And you can cause these people to pay fair market value, whether they like it or not, doesn't matter. The law stipulates that they will. So there's a whole bunch of things going on. 10th Amendment Center is still hanging out there, keeping a watch on things as they can. You also have a bunch of other patriots that think that they decided to withdraw. That's not the case. They move closer to the feds so they can watch them closer. They follow them around the whole nine yards. And, yes, there's still people out there watching, so on both sides. So it's still up in the air as to what is going to eventually take place. Hopefully we can get this, get the legal matters settled in such a manner that they don't have a choice but to back off. That's what my hope is. Next.
Right. Question for John. This person was reading a Veterans Today article that talked about why Obama couldn't be impeached but could be arrested for impersonating a military officer. The article also talked about circuit courts being what we really should use and not Supreme Courts. Could you make this a bit clearer?
Well, if you're talking on a federal level, the Constitution says that there shall be one United States Supreme Court, and then there'll be other inferior courts as the legislators might deem necessary or fit. Right now we have four federal district courts in New York State. I think New York State can deal, be sufficient enough with just one. We don't need four. We need four right now because of all of the illegal cases that they bring in, mostly IRS cases, and they're just fleecing the people, and that's why they need four courts. But if they get back down to only the court cases that they're supposed to hear, one court may be too many. So, but there should be at least one court in every state. They wouldn't be called a district court anymore. But it would be called some kind of a federal court. They call it a federal district court here in New York only because there are four courts and there are four districts. But it would still be a federal court. No matter what you call them, it doesn't matter. The legislators can call them whatever they want to call them. But there probably should be at least just one federal court in every state and then one United States Supreme Court in Washington, as is called for in the Constitution. So I go along with the Constitution, and I agree with that. Now, it is true, these courts fly the admiralty flag. They're letting you know as soon as you walk in. At least they're telling you the truth right off the bat. They're telling you we're running an admiralty court. It gives you the option to object and bring yourself into a court of record, and they're going to be stuck if you're careful and you understand how to do that. They're going to be stuck, and they're going to rule your favor because federal judges don't want to go to prison.
Yeah, that's why they call it.
If they don't,
that's why they call it the dock. When you go and stand up there, John, has anyone contacted any of the Congress people and given them the suggestion to hand over the scandal that's going on with Congress onto the common law grand jury, so they don't have to deal with it?
We haven't made any contact to any people that are servants because our servants aren't doing their job, and And they don't have the capability of doing what the people can do. Only the people can save America. Only people can do this. So everything we've done is without contacting any kind of a servant of any kind to try to get some support, because they're not going to be able to do anything for us anyway. And if anything, it just alarms more people that we're coming. We also have not, and this wasn't by choice, we have not hit anything mainstream, okay? None of the big places. You know, we didn't get onto something like Alex Jones or Glenn Beck or any of those people. We did try, but we didn't make it there, and we didn't really try very hard, and I'm glad we didn't do it, because we've done a lot better doing the way we are doing, which is pure grassroots, mostly, you know, it's people like you guys and other places. And we grow slow enough to be able to educate and get people on board the proper way. You know, if you grow too quick, that's not good either. So I think we've grown at a very good pace, and everything's happened in a very good pace. I mean, of course, we wish we could make this work overnight, but that's just impatience, and it's unreal. It's not reality. But I'll tell you what, in doing what we've done so quick, I'm blown away by it. I think we've done great.
Astonishing.
We've gone from just one county to really we're operating in every state. And we're still, we've got seven countries that want to tie in with us, and we're looking for funds to fund that. Right now we're trying to get the funding so we can accommodate and facilitate for these other countries. You know, some of them, England and Ireland, Canada and
Australia
and a few other places, yeah. So we even have one country that out of Africa that wants to join us, and they're not even a common law country. But you know what? They're people of this earth, and they get their rights from the same place we do, God. So, hey, come on board, you know. Yeah. So we'll try to accommodate them as soon as we can get the monies, you know.
Yes, it's all going rather well. And we're all impatient.
Yeah, even I am.
Yeah. Question for Drake. How is it, Drake, that Cosmic Voice has not been taken down, being on Facebook now that the membership has swelled to over 5,000? Do they not take us seriously? Please advise.
Yes, they do take us seriously. That's why they have not messed with us. That was approached once and once only. I understand that guy is serving on a mountaintop in outer Slobovia someplace. Seriously. Two people lost their license to practice their trades in the process. One person went to a brig. This is not the games we've been playing. The manner in which we've been playing are for keeps. We're not playing games with people. The ones that used to pop up and raise their ugly head and say this and say that and, oh, I'm going to do all this and I'm the savior and whatever, are all gone. If people haven't noticed, there's still notifications coming out. Yeah, right. The federal government says you can keep your doctor, too. When you hear government people or people that are associated with the government coming out saying, oh, we're going to make your life hunky-dory. We're going to give you a pot if you ain't got one and a chicken in every one of them. Political BS primarily. Most of these people are wannabes. None of them have any legal standings. And all of them are basically crooks. So in dealing with crooks, they ran up against a couple of owed favors to people that are involved in this. They didn't like the being told to cool it or you sleep with the fishes. So they decided that when they got a deal that they couldn't refuse made to them, they decided, well, yes, sir, boss. And we haven't had too much problem. They screw with the phones and whatnot. And other than that, nothing real serious. Okay?
Yeah. Yes, there's a bit of a celebration this week, reaching 5,000. Not bad. We had 1,200 in December. Drake, you said in previous shows that Ascension would happen around late spring, early summer. Is this timeline roughly still the same? Are we still on track with events?
In very general terms, yes and no. The more we clean up our mess, the closer that's going to get. The other part of it is the more people use what they have in the way of being able to bless someone, the better it's going to be. The book says very simply, and I don't teach the book, I teach the principle, remember that. The principle states, owe no man anything other than a blessing. In what manner can you bless everybody you run into? Smile at them, say hello. They will go, really, I wonder who that was. You'll find out that a lot of people really appreciate somebody who's pleasant to be around, fun to be with. Even if you've got a nasty, cantankerous attitude, take it and make it funny. It's not difficult. You can do it. Everybody's got a sense of humor, just like you got a conscience. And some of the things that man goes through in terms of what we do is, I'm sure God is in stitches a lot of the times, watching some of the silliness that we pull off. Hey, look at that one over there. My goodness, you know. So in that realm, that ideology, you can be a great benefit. Each and every last person can. In other words, you ain't got to beat somebody over the head with the Bible, but giving them a hand up might make a difference in their life. You never know. Okay?
Right. We've got about 6-7 minutes left. John, do you want to say take a couple of minutes to finish the show?
Well, yeah, I'd just like to, you know, just to cover some of the things we spoke about, and that is ultimately the big date is coming up on June 2nd. We need as much support as possible. We need people to join in, not only with us up in Albany, but actually sign up as members and become a jurist, and we're looking for a lot of people for leadership roles. Particularly, you know, we need 4 people in each county as administrators. They will become paid positions by the state, but you won't be working for the state. You'll be working for the people. Of course, the people will be paying those salaries and whatever cost and overhead is involved. But anyway, we do need 4 administrators in every county, and those people will be administrating justice and bringing in, well, ultimately they are the investigative body of the grand jury. The website, I don't know that we mentioned it again, nationallibertyalliance.org. And again, that's nationallibertyalliance.org. And June 2nd is the big date, and we gotta have a big showing. This is what puts the fear in these bureaucrats, is the people coming up and wanting them to give account of their stewardship. And that's what we're going to do. And that's what we're calling all of these people to court for, and that to give an account, and we're looking at people arrested right there on that day.
Yeah. That will be music to a lot of people's ears.
Yep. So front page of our website, two places you want to look at. On our website, in the very front page, you can read that it's, you know, tells you that the date, and right below it, it gives you the address and a little bit of information. But you can click on news and get the breaking news. It's the top stories, and you can read the case, and you can just get a lot of information on what we're doing and where we're going, and understand exactly what our plan is just by reading that case.
Right. Thanks very much for that, John. Thanks for your time and enlightening.
Thanks for having us.
All.
Appreciate it.
Thanks to Gerard as well. Appreciate you coming on and giving us your time. Drake, do you want to have your final say?
Well, of course, it's what I always say. Get her done.
Right, thanks to John again, thanks to Gerard, and thanks to Drake. And thanks to all the members. I shouldn't let it pass. 5,000 members this week. We're well pleased with that. We've had a big increase, the same as John, and we've been surprised and delighted. and we'll move forward and move forward together. And on that note, I'm going to say good night. Good night to John and Gerard and Drake. And it's good night from me, Thomas Williams, and we'll see you all next week. Bye for now.
Good night.